Welcome to the CGMA Magazine podcast series, a service of the American Institute of CPAs and the Chartered Institute of Management Accountants. This series features discussions with Chartered Global Management Accountants and other experts about the topics, trends, and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
Welcome to the CGMA Magazine podcast series. I'm Editorial Director Jack Hagel. In today's episode, we'll talk gamification with Brett Knowles, the executive partner of PM Squared, a performance management consulting company based in Canada. We'll discuss the rise of gamification in corporate strategy, and we'll talk about the role accountants are playing in the implementation of gamification solutions. Brett, thanks for joining us today.
I'm very happy to be here.
Now, I know that you think gamification is one of the hottest topics out there, and it's a subject that interests me a great deal. For our listeners who don't know, tell us what gamification is, and more specifically, what is the gamification of business?
So gamification is the application of game mechanics to the business world. So game mechanics are things like leaderboards, point systems, leveling up, that sort of thing. In the business world, that's applying those ideas to the activities we want people to do. So you earn activities for the processes and projects you work in and gradually get the opportunity of leveling up and participating in leaderboards, etc.
So is gamification mainstream practice yet, or is this still the talk of white papers?
It depends on how you define it. Game and game playing has always been a part of work. I mean, if we go way back to Huck Finn trying to paint his fence, he used gaming techniques to encourage his buddies to help him go do so. In the business world, we often have competitors between sales teams and challenges and that kind of stuff. So it's always been out there, but the specific application of game mechanics is something that's relatively new.
What does gamification look like in an organization? Give me an example that would connect with our listeners.
Well, most of your listeners probably have sales teams. Rather, even if they're in a government, they still have to sell their services and products to someone. So imagine in your sales team, in the private sector, they get compensated for sales dollars. But if you want to do something that doesn't generate dollars, things like build the sales rep to be a trusted advisor or have them introduce new products that don't offer easy sales, if I'm only compensating them based on dollars, they're likely to go for the easy sales and not building relationships. But if, on the other hand, they have the opportunity of earning points for building deeper relationships, and those points allow them to level up and have other benefits, not linked to compensation, we can begin impacting their behavior.
I suspect gamification is supposed to be fun. What is the emotional response that you want to elicit from users through gamification?
Certainly, gamification is supposed to be fun within the culture of the business. And so we're trying to elicit, more than anything else, the ultimate outcome is employee engagement. What can we do with the games that make work more engaging? And by improving engagement and motivation, if you think of Daniel Pink's work in Drive about the intrinsic motivators that help us become more productive, higher quality, harder working individuals, those are the things we're pushing towards.
So we're talking about changing an employee's behavior. How can a company tell if the games are successful in changing that behavior?
It's easy. Take a look. The changes are radical and almost instant. When you implement a game, within weeks, you'll see a significant change in the organization and the behavior. And so you don't have to get it right. You can experiment. Just like with a game, if you're playing an online game, it increases in complexity as the game progresses. We can do that in the organization. So you start light, and as you see what happens, that's the area you focus in on, and you defocus the other areas.
And so what are the common areas that you see where businesses are particularly ripe for gamification? And what benefits are you seeing in organizations that have tried it?
So the early adopters are doing what I call data-rich areas. Those are things like sales force and even employee learning. And those things are easy, but they may not be strategically important. So areas which are more strategically important could be things like customer service, IT ticket closing, technical support, those sorts of things. And so there are more significant gains to be made than where the common implementations currently are.
So when gamification does work in an organization, why does it work?
Well, it works because it's a shiny object. It outcompetes the other distractors in the organization. So we're able to better, in fact, there's three levers we're pushing on. One is purpose, helping people understand why they're working. Mastery, understand what they need to learn in order to be good at achieving the purpose. And lastly, autonomy. Once people have a clear purpose and they know how to go do it, the best thing we can do for them is to get out of the way. So the autonomy to allow them to get their work done.
I'm curious about that. And I want to go back to your sales team example. How is gamification any different from rewarding a salesperson for having an extremely productive month relative to his or her peers during a period? You know, you sell more widgets and then there's a cash bonus. I mean, it's pretty cut and dry. How is this any different from that?
Well, in a couple of ways. The most significant way is the nonlinear relationship between performance and dollars. So the sales rep isn't only about selling dollars. They might be the single point of contact for your customer, and I need them to be a trusted advisor. Well, if I'm only inspiring them and motivating them based on dollar sales, they're not going to do those activities. So that's thing one. Thing two is paying it forward. I might want my reps to do things now that put us in position for later on. And if I'm only inspiring them for dollars, they're not going to go do that. So there's a mix of things, and also just self-worth, right? If the rep's only job is to go there and drag money out your wallet, they're going to behave differently than if they understand their purposes of a different mix.
But those older methods have worked. How can a manager today justify the cost of gamification when other methods, such as sales competition, have worked in the past?
Well, I guess the open question is, have they worked as well as possible? Is there more productivity or better customer satisfaction that you could have achieved by doing things differently? So buggy whips worked for a long time. That doesn't mean that they're a bad answer, but they're the right answer in the right application. So in many cases, you may still need to compensate based on quarter end sales. That's the explicit part. But once that's taken care of, there's a lot of research that proves that adding more dollars to the mix does not make people work harder. In fact, a lot of research that actually proves quite the opposite. Secondly, we all like challenges. So the idea of mixing it up, like I don't need to keep that game constant over time. I can change the mix and the challenges and so forth and keep it interesting for the reps. And we've seen that does do things like reduce employee turnover.
Who should govern this in an organization? Is this the domain of the CEO or the CFO or the CIO?
You're right. Someone has to control the game and make sure the game is what I call a fair game. Typically, that seems to be falling more on the CFO's office because of their skills around numeracy, audit, the fact that they're cross-functional.
And so how specifically are accountants being drawn into gamification?
They're actually being drawn in not necessarily as a referee. That's more the job of the CEO, but as the game mechanic. It's their job to develop the game mechanism and help get the game mechanisms implemented.
So help me understand the solutions. Are they custom made? Are there any off-the-shelf kind of products available?
There are already a surprising number of off-the-shelf solutions out there. Now, most of them are intended for B2C, a business to consumer. So there are things like the point systems you see when you go to a hotel or airline, and those have been extended to employee. And then there's a bunch of ones which are incented as employee incentive. So similar to the compensation system you had before, but if you earn enough points, you get a certificate to go to the grocery store or, get a free trip. Or, many companies already have sort of the President's Club. If you make enough sales, you get the other benefits of going to a club and so forth. So those sorts of things are out there and there's software to enable them. We're now talking about sort of a new genre of software where we're linking that to the performance measurement system. So we're capturing the strategy and the strategic objectives as well as the raw performance numbers and coupling those things together. We're also bringing in the human resources component. So all those systems already exist. So it's more about bundling them together.
So how does an organization go about building a gamification solution? And what types of expertise is required for a gamification project within an organization? Do you need psychologists? Do you need game developers? You mentioned HR. What do you need to get that started?
Well, I'd like to answer that to say you can do it yourself. We've all played games, and to a certain extent, you can plug that in. But this is certainly an area where learning from other organizations and bringing external expertise is a great accelerator. Nor is this something that you have to get done correctly to begin with. When you're setting up a chart of accounts, if you miss something, you have to go back and restate, 2 years worth of history. In this case, if you miss something, you just add it in for the next game. And games typically are about one quarter long. So you've got 3 periods or 3 months. At the end of every period, you have a bit of a debrief and you get set up for the next period. And after 3 periods, the game's over, you reset and start over. So you have lots of learning cycles to improve the game as you go forward.
How can an organization identify the right carrots in the games? How does that process work?
It's pretty straightforward. So it should be whatever your strategic priorities are. So imagine you've got two strategic objectives. One is, new product development, and the other is penetrate new markets. But you decide penetrate new markets is more important. Let's say it's twice as important as new products. So I should have twice as many points in the bucket available for my penetrate markets side as I do for new products. And that's how you begin. And you run the first game. And if that elicited the right behavior, yay. If not, change the what you called carrots, but change the points available and try it again.
So, people are motivated by different things, and I could see in an organization some really clinging to the gamification or the game, while others might feel a little repelled by it. How do you make sure that your good employees, particularly those who don't engage in the game, are still recognized for good work? Are there any factors that predict whether a company's culture will embrace gamification?
Well, so there are always some people that don't get terribly engaged with the game. And if we take a look at it, it's not that they're not disengaged. They're merely not proactively being engaged. So many of the structures that you set up in the game are trying to communicate what does good behavior look like. You know, we want you to be intimate with the customer and have extensive communications. Some people don't necessarily need the games and the points to make that happen. But once they're clear that's important, they follow the lead. So we have never seen this to be a distractor from good performance. And we've seen in many cases where people initially are reluctant, they get sucked into the vortex. Because now we have a transparency and a risk-free way to have a conversation about how we and our colleagues are performing. And so it encourages a type of conversation that never happened before.
And what are some of the unintended consequences of gamification?
Well, we've seen a number of things happen that we didn't expect to see happen. So, for example, the whole engagement thing was not something that we thought was going to be an outcome, but by far it's the most significant statistically viable thing. We've seen other unexpected things like improved customer satisfaction. So even in gaming mechanics where we're not addressing the customer or any of the customer touch processes, we've still seen a significant upkick in the perception on the part of customers. So what we learned is that those perceptions leak through in all sorts of unexpected ways.
Can gamification have any negative consequences? You know, for instance, do users become addicted to these interfaces, maybe to the detriment of other tasks?
Well, you do run two serious risks. One is when you set up a game mechanic that's in conflict with the strategy. Best examples, leaderboards or challenges. So I could be assigning leaderboards, my top employees get identified. The dilemma is in some cultures, they don't like that. And there are many Asian cultures that just don't like that in total. But there's also inside single organizations, some departments that like it, like sales, and other departments like marketing or customer support that actually repel that competitiveness. And they really want collaboration instead. So if you mistakenly implement a game mechanic like competition leaderboards in a department that doesn't like competition, like customer service, you end up with an adverse reaction. So you need to pay attention carefully to what mechanics you implement. Concerning whether people sort of get addicted to this and it outcompetes other tasks, absolutely. And in some cases, that's what you want to have happen. What are those other tasks? Facebook. Or other activities that people do during working hours that are distraction from the work. Now, you don't need to turn into a 7x24 servant to the organization, but we do need a way to maximize how we use our brains at work. And if employing them to optimize this game is challenging and interesting to your brain at the same time as progressing the business, that has to be a good thing. Now, in terms of outcompeting other things, you do run the risk. This is the quintessential example of be careful what you ask for because you might get it. If you incent people to have great relationships with their customers, you might find it works to the detriment of some of the processing work you might want them to get done. So the trick is, after every game, take a look at the outcomes and adjust the throttle.
So what is the right tone for a gaming style interface? How do you prevent users from feeling sort of manipulated?
Well, so the That's a great question in terms of tone and manipulation. Those two things are kind of linked together. So every organization does have its own culture, and this is a great tool for shifting the culture. I mean, the bottom line is this. Culture is basically how we behave, and your thinking is the root of all those behaviors. So if we change how you think, you'll change how you behave. And this is an incredibly manipulative way of changing how people think. And you can decide whether that's good or bad, but we all know from watching our kids play games, it changes how people think. In fact, here's what we know. We know that if you play a game with colleagues from other departments, you are more likely to collaborate with them outside of the game. So in many organizations where we have silos going on and people hate each other, if we force them into a gaming and allow them into a gaming environment where they're working with those other teams to solve challenges, when the game is over, they're going to help each other solve their business challenges. And we found this is a great tool for onboarding virtual teams. These may be people who you'll never meet. They're in China or India or some other place. By playing these games, we break down those barriers and they become more unified. And when you play a game, there's a huge residual effect. So it works for about 48 hours afterwards. And what we've also learned is if you play the game consistently for 6 weeks, the change is forever. So it's a very quick way to change the culture in a business.
Does the gamification effect start to wear off after a user's been in the system too long? And what point do players disengage with the game? You know, do gamification solutions have an expiration date?
Well, of course, the answer is both yes and no. We've all played games that we played when we were kids and we still play, something like chess. There are other games that we played when we were kids we don't play anymore, maybe checkers. And if you reflect on that simple model, it may be because checkers is just too simple. And when you're a young child, it is engaging enough, but you lose interest in it. But chess is always a challenge. Likewise with online games, but the way that they've solved them is the game complexity increases over time. So when you first start playing a game, the tools you're given are simple, the challenges are simple, and you get that feeling of success, and they gradually add more and more challenges and quirks into the system. So you can potentially set up a game that will remain challenging forever, but you can also continually change it. What we do know in business is your strategy always changes, and therefore, de facto, your game environment is always going to change as well.
How does the evolution of video games affect business gamification? If a mobile game introduces a new way to addict players, will that cross-pollinate to the business side? Can you give us an example?
Well, first off, I can only hope that there's cross-pollination. We've often said that the way we've currently designed business processes up to now are to design for product. We design systems to get product off the assembly line. We're now talking about designing processes for people. And the best experimentation ground of any and learning ground is in online gaming. That's telling us what we can design to make it more engaging for people. So I should hope if we learn something in the online gaming world, we can quickly bring it on stream in the business world.
Let me ask a scope question here. How large is the business of gamification and what types of auxiliary businesses and providers have cropped up to provide these kinds of services?
I would say in terms of the customers, it's everyone. Every employee, I believe, should have some mechanism of game mechanic involved in their work. For a number of reasons. It helps the employee manage themselves, helps a boss manage them. It's just abundantly clear to me that it's the right answer to solve a lot of challenges we've been unable to grapple with. And that's going to have a bunch of spin-offs. Spin-offs, obviously, in terms of software enablement for this stuff, because, of course, it's a completely untapped opportunity. And people like Gartner have all sorts of bizarre forecasts of the spend that's going to happen, but the numbers are, you know, astronomical. As well as things like training around this, obviously books on game mechanics. So I think it's a whole new world is blossoming, but it's, again, building with components that already exist.
So what is the next big thing for gamification?
I think it's just adoption. I think we've now seen it's out there. And once that gets traction, I think it's going to spread like wildfire. We've seen a lot of other great management concepts take off. And, you know, things like re-engineering, Lean, Six Sigma, Balanced Scorecard, all of these have scratched a particular itch and have taken off. This is the first one I've seen over the last 30 years that scratches multiple itches. So things like re-engineering helps us sort out our processes or Lean or Six Sigma. Balanced Scorecard helps us manage our strategy and strategy execution better. This is the first thing that I've seen that covers the whole gamut. There's every single last one of those, you know, management best practices is incorporated in this body of knowledge. And so I think the biggest thing we're going to go see is it spreading across management domains.
Brett, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm very happy to be here.
If you'd like to read articles by Brett Knowles or see videos featuring him, please visit cgmamagazine.org. This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.